You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. This is your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is music veteran writer, composer, producer, and performer John Matarazzo, who has been accompanied by legendary engineer and producer Logan Strand to form Logical Drift. Both have worked with major acts in the past 20-plus years, from the electronica, pop, new age, to world music genres, in which their success has geared them to manifest musical healing compositions that produce enlightenment, relaxation, and tranquility. Their journey has also begun to initiate a network of like-minded practices within the alternative education and new age community in order to support each other's projects through music as a unification medium. So let's meet our guest now. Well, let's welcome John to the show. Hi, John. It's great to have you on the show.
Great to be on the show, Lance.
Wonderful. Well, I guess all of us are kind of curious, because this is a little outside of my usual show, but a lot of us are curious about your upbringing and how you were influenced and guided into a music career.
Actually, it was my father's idea to get me out of trouble, because I was always getting in trouble in school. And he said, oh, maybe you want to study music. I said, okay, sounds good to me.
Well, good.
And he suggested, how about if you take organ lessons? You know, at the time, you know, World Tour Organ was very popular. So I said, okay, I'll try that. And so I started taking organ lessons. And then I decided, oh, I like guitar better, so I started studying guitar and, you know, just kind of built from there.
Did his remedy work? Did you stay out of trouble?
No, I'm still getting in trouble.
Well, good for you. I like to hear that. I also read that you began to write and compose your own music within the jazz and classical genres very early in your career, and even inked a music publishing deal. Do you want to elaborate on that a bit?
Sure. Now we're going back a while, back into the 60s when, you know, rock was starting to happen, the Beatles, and, you know, the British invasion was happening, and people were getting turned on to music. I had a little band. We played for high school dances and stuff, and I started writing, you know, music, because the big thing was to write your own material. So I started writing songs, and, you know, one thing led to another, and we started playing at small venues in Manhattan. And then I just started recording some of the things that we did, and I took them to a publisher, and they liked what I was writing and gave me a publishing deal.
Wow. Well, and that kind of segued or led you into meeting some pretty big popular acts. Like Ike and Tina Turner, Sly and the Family Stone, and The Weather Report. Who else did you bump elbows with, and do you have any interesting stories about that time?
Then I had a band, and we met some business management people in Manhattan. Al Aronowitz at that time was managing Bob Dylan, and, through a number of friends we met, and We started doing like session work, and started doing performance backup work, and we got invited to do a lot of gigs and to go on the road and do, you know, different kinds of performance opportunities with a lot of these artists. With Ike and Tina Turner at the time, they were hot because they had a couple of hit tunes out. Proud Mary, you know, it was very big at the time, and so we went on the road with them and backed them up. And, you know, so one thing led to another, and we just started doing more and more of this kind of work, and we kind of got well-known for, you know, being available to go out and go on the road with a lot of different people. With Sly and the Family Stone, it was always, you know, expect the unexpected, I guess, is what it boiled down to. Because you never knew if he was going to show up for a show, if we were going to be playing, or if we were just going to have to do the whole show ourselves. Mm-hmm. It was crazy times.
Oh, yeah. Well, let's face it, everybody during the 60s was doing drugs, including myself. And then, of course, you have Woodstock. I don't know if that figured into your story at all or not.
Only to the extent that we had an invitation to go, and we weren't able to be there because we had conflicting engagements. We had to be in Cincinnati to do a couple of shows there, and so we just said, no, we can't do it because we've already got commitments.
But
Michael Lang was disappointed, and you know, years later I did a couple of things with him, but it was just one of those opportunities that we just couldn't do because of conflict, you know, scheduling conflicts.
Yeah, the same here. Now, you mentioned Bob Dylan just a moment ago, and he's been kind of an elusive and very private person all of these years. Frankly, I wasn't a big fan of his during the early years. I just didn't get it. Now I get it, but how did that relationship develop? He's still around doing music today, isn't he?
Oh, yes, he is. Yeah, he's a great guy, very nice guy. He was always very nice to me. We always had a great relationship. I learned a lot from him. To this day, I have to say that a lot of the things that I know musically in terms of, you know, traditional folk and pop music, I learned studying from him.
Wonderful.
He was always a great guy. We always had a great time together, and he always had a great sense of humor. And we were at a party once up in Woodstock, and Al Aronowitz was there. And at this time, Al was no longer managing him. Al was like his first manager. And we were sitting around with a bunch of people who didn't know who he was, and he was just saying to those people, "You see that guy over there? Keep him away from me." And that was Al Aronowitz, of course. And at that time, he was writing a column for the New York Post called The Pop Scene, which was like the super influential column, like you wanted to be written up in if you were, you know, an aspiring or a successful rock pop musician.
Interesting.
So it was a lot of fun, a lot of laughs.
I'll bet. Yeah, he always seems like a nice person. Now, there's a transition that you must have made, which involves travel to distant lands and a spiritual pursuit or a spiritual journey, which kind of takes you into your current music, which is really an amazing experience. When did that transition begin, and what can you tell us more about that shift for you?
Well, I guess, you know, I don't really see it as a transition. I was doing, you know, experimenting with music and musical sounds when I was a kid. I was always, like, making stuff to play music, even making little, makeshift guitars, stretching pieces of wire and playing them and, you know, trying out, you know, what pitches sound like. And after that, making bamboo instruments. When I was in high school, yeah, as I said, I had a band, and we were playing for like all the high school dances and all the parties and stuff that were going on. And one of my teachers, Sister Christopher, I went to a Catholic high school.
Oh,
she came to me with a clipped out an article from the New York Times about Harry Parch, who was a composer, a serious composer, who developed and designed and made his own instruments, and basically was kind of like very innovative guy. He came up with instruments that were built around the system of just intonation. He had done a recording for Columbia Records, and she said, maybe you'd be interested in some of this music. I started listening to this, and it was very, very different kind of music. It's nothing like you would hear like in a classical concert hall. It was based on a whole different tuning system. Just intonation, which he defined as the real system of harmonization that was given to the planet Earth.
Oh, wow.
By whom he never said, but you got the sense that it was you know, really a spiritual kind of thing with him. And I started listening to this music, and I started, you know, making my own instruments and trying this stuff out. So I was always, you know, experimenting and listening to different kinds of music. Even though I was still playing in a rock band and still, you know, doing the whole rock and roll thing, I was always curious about these other possibilities of musical expression.
Ah. It's interesting that you should bring him up, because recently I've become very interested, partially due to the movie Inception, but also because of the internet information on it, that middle C was intentionally tuned to a disharmonic frequency, which was 440. And it's been recently discovered that if you tune middle C just a hair above that to 528 and match all of the octaves with that, that the music is an entirely different experience. It actually has healing properties. Is that something that you might be talking about?
Well, yeah, well 440 is A above middle C.
Oh, okay.
But that's, you know, that's the kind of the compromise tuning system that has come down to us over the last couple of hundred years, I guess, for tuning instruments. You know, for a number of reasons, there was always this always issues, primarily with vocal music, where instruments that weren't tuned to a standard, let's call it the 12-tone scale, the tempered scale, always presented a problem, because if a song was written for somebody who sang, who was an alto voice, let's say, if somebody who was a baritone wanted to sing that same song, you had to retune the entire instrument. Or in the case of some cases, you'd have to build a new instrument just to accompany that song for that vocal range. So the compromise that came along was, let's make a tempered scale where everything is slightly out of tune, technically. So that people can, you know, so that you can change keys, essentially. Have this idea where you can have 12 tones, where you can change up, change down, E flat, C, B flat, G, whatever you have to do to accommodate the human voice vocal range for a particular song.
Mm-hmm.
But like any compromise, you lose something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 528 is an ideal pitch, and from my experience, it really is really centered around the chakras and the vibrations that are kind of, like, I guess, put out by the planet that we live on. Getting back to your question, the whole idea of 440 is basically just a compromise, just to be able to make it possible for instruments and musicians to play together in various keys, primarily with the focus on accompanying vocal music.
Hmm.
Now, historically, the whole idea of the solfège frequencies is something that goes back to Gregorian chant. And it really was developed as kind of a spiritual healing a method.
Mm-hmm.
This chant the old Gregorian chant, for example, like the hymn to St. John the Baptist, all of these things were created basically around certain frequencies and pitches that were considered to be consonant with the vibrations of the planet and with the vibrations that were most beneficial to the human psyche.
Wow.
But, you know, we kind of got away from it, as I said. We had to make a compromise because it was limiting in the sense that musicians wanted to be able to play music together without having to retune their instruments every time they wanted to play a different piece of music. So the compromise that came along was a 440 and the tempered scale. Yeah, and like any compromise, you gain some things, but you lose some things. Mm-hmm. And I think we lost a lot. We lost a lot, and yeah, I would like us to see that we can get back to the 528, tuning. And I think now with the advent of new instruments, synthesizers, and things that can be tuned very quickly and very easily electronically, mm-hmm. that we can probably do that in the future.
Yes, I would like to see that too, because I don't think it's any secret that the Earth is in big trouble, and so are we.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I'm, as a musician and, somebody who's in the business, I know that your music is designed to help heal the world because it does affect the chakras. Isn't that part of the psychoacoustics of the music that you're putting out now?
Exactly. And a lot of the instruments that we use on the project, the Logical Drift Project, were basically centered around this whole idea of the 528 tuning.
Wow.
For example, we use a yukigomi, which is an instrument we created on the synthesizer, which is basically a combination of different layers of sound, but all centered around that 528 frequency.
Oh, good. Wonderful. Wow, that's really exciting. I mean, that is really exciting, to get out of the disharmonic frequencies and start to move back into resonance with the planet and with each other.
Yeah, well, that's where we want to go. That's exactly what we want to do. That's exactly what we're trying to help people get to.
Wonderful.
Because, without, I guess without even telling them that that's what we're doing. You know, the people
right.
Hear and they say, hey, I like that. That makes me feel good. That's,
right, right, exactly. Of course, our audience here likes to know all the background on the spiritual stuff because it's a curious audience. But it also is nice to be able to just listen to music and know that it's not something that is subconsciously doing something like mind control or placing bad thoughts in there, because there is a lot of mind control stuff going on too these days.
Well, I was telling you earlier, I have a fairly broad view of music, and going to different cultures and listening to music in different parts of the world and recording and performing with different people,
mm-hmm.
you get a different sense of what music is all about. For example, the music that we recorded when we went to Morocco, the Gnawa trance music. Working with these people, their music is about healing. Basically, the Nawa music that we recorded with, like for example Mustafa Bakbu or Male Mahmoud Ganya, these guys played the sentir, which is basically a three-stringed lute instrument, a low lute, almost like something that would be similar to what we would consider a bass guitar or a bass.
Mm-hmm.
But the music is all centered around a very simple tuning, an octave and the octave above and a fifth, and songs that basically are invocation to saints, for healing for a person who's ill.
Mm.
And basically that's the function of their music. It's it's basically about healing.
Yeah, that's something that we kind of lost touch with, I think, as far as I can tell. I mean, music became a profitable industry, it kind of got taken over by the corporations, as you know, and I think it's lost some of its heart. Not entirely, but, maybe you have some thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of commercial music is just that. It's manufactured in the service of selling a product, whatever that product might be. Anybody who's listened to music for 10 minutes or can tell the difference.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Right. Right. Now,
when you go to other cultures, you get a sense that, hey, music has a whole different, is in the service of a whole different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Music is in the service of healing people, making people, bringing people together, making people feel better about themselves.
Mm-hmm.
healing whatever is ailing them. You know, in Bali, every little village has a little gamelan orchestra.
Wow.
And these people basically, this orchestra is basically about community. These people get together and play gamelan music, which has an entirely different tonal system than anything that we're familiar with in the
wow.
West. But it's about, it's really about expressing themselves as a community.
Huh. Interesting. That's another thing that we seem to have lost touch with is our community. We've lost touch with our ability to create community, living in isolated, fragmented, busy lives. And, you know, it's a dangerous and precarious situation for the planet and for all of us, as you know. I said that already, but you can't say it enough. That healing is necessary, and music is a major component of healing. Bali and Morocco, what were some of your other stops that you noticed were creating music for spiritual healing or for communion with the, you know, the shamans or getting in touch with, you know, something higher? What are some of the other countries that you had that experience with?
Well, in India, for example, sitar music, the traditional classical music of India.
They
basically have that same sensibility that we seem to have gotten away from in the West, where music is primarily a commercial function.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I have no problem with the commercial aspects of music. You know, you play music, you want to make a living at it. That's okay, but. You know, you have to remember what it is you're really doing. What is, you know, what the purpose of your making music is all about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you know, in these other in these other cultures, they haven't lost that sensibility. They understand that you know, music is about moving people's hearts and minds to get them to think, you know, higher thoughts and to be in a better place spiritually,
mm-hmm.
mentally,
mm-hmm.
what in every sense.
Mm, absolutely.
But in India, you know, it was a great experience because you know the musicians there are very dedicated people, and they have this sense about, you know, we're doing something that's again for the community, for the people that we live with, and you know, the people who come to hear our music.
Right. I remember years ago listening to Ravi Shankar, and that's one of the people that you've worked with in India, isn't it?
Yeah, we did a couple of projects with Ravi, and in fact, we released him on one of our labels on Terrascape Records a couple of years ago, and we just felt that, you know, his music was so powerful and so meaningful and so and necessary for the planet that we had to do something with him, and we got in touch with his people. And we did a couple of projects in one in Varanasi, which is where he's from originally, and one in Delhi. And we did about 3 or 4 hours of music. We wanted to videotape, but we just really got into the music and just decided we don't want any distractions from from a camera crew and
right.
Recorded the music.
Right. With all these different places that you've been to, and that you've taped Morocco, India, and Bali, and I'm sure some others, maybe Australia, New Zealand, the Asian countries. I mean, boy, they have some interesting musical.
Yeah, we've done projects in China. We've done projects in the Philippines.
Wow.
It's kind of like, okay, what's interesting? What haven't we done, and what can we do next?
Cool. Always a sense of exploration. I like that.
Yeah, that's pretty much where it's at. I mean, we started doing years ago. We started thinking about these kinds of things, and one of the first place we went was Bali, and we kind of just went there cold. We didn't know what we were going to find,
mm-hmm.
and we've met a couple of guys who said, you know, come to my village up on the north side of the island, Singaraja province, And, you know, we've got the guy said, I have a great gamelan orchestra in my village. So we went there. Now, the main cultural center of Bali is Ubud. There are a lot of schools that teach classical gamelan playing and stuff. But we decided we were going to go up to the north side of the island where there were just simple villages, people playing basically in their own little farm villages.
Mm-hmm.
We went up there and we met with a family, and they said, "Yeah, we have an orchestra in our village," and they had like a little central square and a little covered central square pavilion, like maybe like 20 feet by 20 feet, not very big. But they all showed up. All the guys were dressed in their finest. They all sat down and they played for like 3 hours. Then they had dancers, and we recorded them. And at the end of the day, I said, "Oh, I go, man, we've been here like 5 hours, and it's a 3-hour drive up there from where we were on the other side of the island." And I said, "Oh, we're going home." But then a guy comes up on a little, on a little motor scooter, a little Vespa, from the next village down, which was maybe like a quarter of a mile away down the same road. And he said, "You have to come and record us. You can't just record them. You know, we're the next village, and you have to record us too."
Wow! And so you did.
So I said, "Okay, we'll come back tomorrow."
Okay.
We came back tomorrow, and they were all ready. They had their own little pavilion in their village, and they were ready to go.
Wow.
We recorded them too.
That's amazing. That's wonderful. Did you notice?
There was this whole sense of, we want you to hear what we're doing. We want you to hear our music. We want you to appreciate it.
Wow. That's terrific.
So it's always fun. You never know where you're going to run into on these deals. With Mustafa Bagbu, was totally serendipitous. We went there to record a whole different group of guys, and we recorded them. But then one of them said, "Hey, Mustafa Bagbu is over and sitting in the central square there in Marrakesh. Why don't you come over and talk to him?" So I went over and talked to him. He said, "Oh, come to my house. I want you to record us." I said, "Okay, let's do it."
And how was it?
It was great. It was a great session.
Oh, good, good.
We sat in his inner courtyard. The house was built around like an inner courtyard.
Uh-huh.
It's a warm country there, all year round. And we sat in the inner courtyard there. We brought a couple of guys, with recording gear, and we recorded them in his house.
Wow. Wow. Did you develop any preferences in terms of countries and types of music, or did you feel they were all different, unique, and on their own?
No, I think they're all, as you said, very different, unique, and on their own. I've been just about everywhere in the world. South America, I love the music of South America.
Mm.
I love the music of the Andes. I love traditional Venezuelan music. China, I love Zhang music. China, it's one of my favorite. I have a Zhang in my studio, but went to do some recordings there. I brought a Zheng back with me.
Oh, my God.
But I brought some gamelan back from Bali, too. And I've got a studio full of instruments from all over the world.
Wow.
That I just enjoy and love to have. But for me, I love them all. For me, ever since I was a kid, sound just touches me. Any sound, whatever it is, it just hits me, and I have a feeling for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anything I hear, I like.
Now, do you feel that music has the potential to shift our consciousness?
Yeah, it depends on if you're willing to let your conscience be shifted.
good answer. Very good.
You know, sometimes I can be walking down the road and a truck zooms by and they hit the brakes and screech. I'll say, that's an interesting sound. I like that.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
Okay, so if you're open, if your head is open and you want to listen and you're listening for sounds and what do these sounds mean, then yes, absolutely right. If you want your consciousness to be changed, all you have to do is listen, and you have to be willing to let it be changed.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Now, with your present music, Logical Drift, now, is that the name of the the whole group of music that you're doing, or is that just the one album that you're doing?
No, we're going to do a series of albums called Logical Drift.
Oh,
that's
good.
Just Logan
yeah.
Strand and I, but we plan to work as a duo on these projects. And right now we've got two more in the can.
Okay.
And we're working on another one right now, so it'll be three. We're just going to keep doing them. We have no plan not to do another one. We plan to do a series.
Now, it's very soothing and very, I don't know how to describe it, but it's very easy to listen to, and it just kind of draws you in. You also mentioned that it has the ability to tone or tune the chakras. How did you discover that, and how does that work?
I do yoga, so I've been listening into yoga technique and meditation for many years.
Mm.
I started studying with Swami Sachidananda. He was here probably started coming to the United States. He established the Hatha Yoga Institute.
And he
taught me a lot of yoga techniques, and I just became aware of all the concepts, or surrounding yoga and the chakras, and techniques to awaken them and to stimulate them.
Ah, and then you're able to incorporate that into the music itself, aren't you?
Exactly. Yeah, that's really what our aim was, to be able to get into, getting the frequencies that stimulate the chakras and getting them into, the compositions that we put on the album.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Now, just out of curiosity, I know that you have, it's a little early in the show to be talking about it, but I wanted to find out from you now. There was something mentioned about the ability to download some of the free tracks off of your albums. Is that something that people can do?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I got to be honest with you. I don't do the website, so I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I think you can download up to three tracks from the album for free.
Good, good. And what is your website so that people can find that?
Logicaldrift.com.
Oh, well, that's easy to remember.
That's it.
Well, okay. Folks, you heard it here first.
Logicaldrift.com.
.com, okay. The cover is very interesting, too. It's very soothing. I like the whole concept, and I like what you're doing. And did you have a hand in developing the cover as well? I mean, obviously you have a say in how it comes out.
Actually, that was designed by a friend of mine in Los Angeles, Aaron Nersoya. He's a great graphic designer and photographer. His website is abetdisc.com. He's done a lot of work with me over the years in terms of graphic design, and he's just got a real sensitivity for design and how to express visually what he hears, in the music.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. It's beautiful. He does beautiful work. The whole thing is really quite an awesome.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. I certainly think that you're way ahead of the crowd, and you're going to be very successful at this. You are already. Are there other people that helped you work on this that you feel are really talented that you wanted to give some credit to, or?
Well, obviously Logan Strand, Ed Finley, who really managed all of the coordinated everything in terms of getting the studio coordinated and getting the people involved to support staff.
Mm-hmm.
There are just so many.
Can you tell us a little bit more about Logan and his work as well, and how it kind of sinks into your work?
Well, Logan and I actually met in South America.
Oh.
I was with my uncle, who has an air conditioning business in South America, which is not a bad business to be in South America.
Right.
Like having a furnace business in Alaska.
Right.
No brainer. Anyway, we were in a small border town called Antonio, on the border between Colombia and Venezuela. We were in a cafe, and I saw Logan. He was sitting at the bar, and I could tell he was not a local, let's say. And I started up a conversation, and I asked him, you know, so what are you doing here? It's really not a place where I would expect to see someone like you. He said, oh, I came down here because I wanted to study the traditional Colombian music and the people I was supposed to be with, blah blah blah. They didn't show up, and it looks like the project is going to fall apart.
Huh.
So we started talking, and he's from London.
Oh.
And I said, well, when you get back to London, give me a call. I gave him my phone number at home, and I said maybe we can do something together. And he'd already done a bunch of projects. He'd been doing things in reggae music with Sly and Robbie and with Lee Scratch Perry, some of the people from the Wailers, Bob Marley's group. And he and I started talking, and that's how I got into doing some of these other projects. And we kind of just formed this in kind of like this informal relationship where we kept bouncing ideas off each other. He kept coming to me with projects. I kept telling him, well, look, maybe we can do something like this. Maybe, what do you think about doing something with Lee Perry? Or what do you think about doing something with some ska, some ska, traditional ska music players? And, we'd just bounce ideas off each other. And it would be either me or him. Okay, who's going to go do it? I'm going to go. Are you going to go? Maybe we'll go together. And so it just kind of built up from there. We've been doing projects over the years. I guess for probably like 15, 20 years now we've been working together.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
We just said, okay, we've been doing stuff for a lot of other people. How about if we do something?
Oh. So, that's when the light bulb went off.
Yeah, right.
Very good. Well, I also like that it looks like you're going into a whole new area that you may not have been actively involved with, which is the merging or the integration of the New Age genre, alternative medicine, metaphysics, music therapy, music healing, naturopathy, and spa communities. So how did that idea develop, and how do you see that emerging in the near future?
That's a question that's just loaded with history. I mean,
we have time.
We started thinking about this, when we started thinking about this project, actually, the Logical Drift Project. I had been to Israel. We went to at the Dead Sea, and just exploring the whole terrain there. The whole the natural terrain. And at the Dead Sea, there's a huge movement. A huge spa movement where for wellness, healing, all kinds of therapeutic resources.
Mm-hmm.
And, my experience there and in talking with Logan, we decided that, we wanted to focus on this whole idea of creating a music that was going to be centered around this whole feeling, this whole concept of wellness and healing.
Mm.
And so it kind of grew from there. And we started exploring more and more, the connection between them. And that's how Logical Drift came about.
Well, that's very logical.
Yes.
Have you during your
fun? Yeah, but I'm sorry. Go ahead.
During your many years of yoga experience and meditation, and obviously you've been to so many other countries that have probably taken you in some pretty high places internally. Have you had any experiences or numerous experiences of what people refer to as enlightenment as a result?
I'm not really sure how to answer that. Enlightenment in the sense of what, feeling this, you know, once I was in South America and I had this feeling like this huge sense of the power of love.
Ah.
It was just like an intense feeling. All of a sudden I felt like this intense feeling of love. Not love coming from me, but love coming to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's ever since then, it's just been like I've been on this path.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Well, you know, a lot of my guests talk about that and mention that they're guided by invisible forces that are, you know, moving them closer to their soul's purpose in life, which basically is spreading the love. I guess the Beatles started, you know, their songs with that. So the message hasn't changed much. It's just that the world has, and I think it needs love more than ever now, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean,
yeah,
that's always
yeah.
been the message, I think. I mean, there is no other message.
There really isn't.
That's the message.
Right. That is it. So there's
and
obviously...
Either you get it or you don't. I mean, eventually
right.
I think everybody gets it because
yeah.
there's no other possibility. You have to get it sooner or later.
Yeah. Yes. 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 That's an inevitable... inevitability.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody gets it sooner or later. It's just the power of love.
Yes. Yeah.
People sing about it. People talk about it. You know, and it's all that's the one and only message.
Yeah.
There is no other one.
Yes. I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. And it seems that there are more people that are waking up to that now, that are having these kind of epiphanies and realizing that. And it seems as if there's almost a movement afoot to shift the way things are, that we're tired of, we've always been tired of wars. I mean, I remember the Vietnam protests, and it's time to put a stop to all that. That can't be a loving act. There's no love in killing another human being. So I'll know that love has conquered all when we see it happening here in the world.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, I think we have a long way to go.
I think you're right.
That's not the point. You know, we always have a long way to go, but the point is love conquers all, as you said. That's the only way, that's the only reality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So now you said you had a couple of other albums that are already to go now.
Yeah. We have another album that we, another two albums actually that we finished.
Wow.
We're working on a third one now. So over the next, probably the next 18 months, we'll be releasing them. And then from there, you know, we really have no plans not to do more. You know, our mm-hmm. plans are just to continue to put stuff out, you know, as long as we feel inspired and we feel that, you know, people are interested and want to hear what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We'll keep doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, good, good. When you're doing the music together, do you ever, I mean, obviously you must have this experience because all artists and anybody that does anything creative has this experience where there's a moment of excitement and when the project just gets really... you just get so thrilled to work on it that you can't stop. I imagine that you both have that experience while you're doing this music.
Yeah, we do, and our wives have let us know that it's something that can't continue. We have to know
honey,
when to put
come
it down
home.
And come home.
All right, I see.
So, yeah, we get pretty involved. You know, once we close the door, you know, we don't want to be disturbed, but it gets pretty intense. In fact, this first album, I was responsible for doing the final edits. And during the summer months, we usually have a house in Poland. We usually spend our summers in the south of Poland.
Uh-huh.
And I spent most of that summer, July and August, just doing the edits on this album. And got, you know, I was pretty much locked up in the studio there for most of the day. So my family let me know that that wasn't entirely acceptable.
Ah. Well, communication is the key, and love is the answer. you have worked with some monks in Tibet as well, and some Buddhist monks, and you, of course, mentioned the gamelan of Bali. What are the monks? Are those the ones that blow the long horns?
Those are Tibetan monks. We did some things at the Mitrai Vihai Monastery in Lahore, we did some projects there with them. I wasn't there for all of the sessions. I was kind of in and out, but I love their music. And we did another project in Thailand also with some Buddhist monks in Thailand, which was just mind-blowing. Up in the north in Chiang Mai. In fact, we may be incorporating some of their chants in one of our forthcoming albums on the third album.
Oh, wonderful!
We've got some things we plan to put in there with them also.
Now, with all of the incredible community music that you've recorded all over the world with indigenous people, have you thought of? I'm sure you have thought of putting together just a whole album with that music alone, with from these various places that you've been.
Like a compilation, compilation. Yeah, we've been talking about that. We haven't decided yet what we want to include. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like been on the back burner with us because we've got so many other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But that is something we plan to do.
Oh, good, because that, for some reason, that just, while I was, talking to you, I just had this kind of flash of, bringing all of this amazing material that we can't travel to here into our homes, and it would be a wonderful experience.
As I said, that's something that, we're thinking about seriously. We've just really got to decide who's going to be on it, and
Right.
How we're gonna put the whole project together?
Right
now we're in the midst of planning a new project with a classical guitarist and blending classical music, Western classical music elements with sitar and tabla from India.
Oh, nice, very nice.
We're working very closely with a couple of guys who are well known in India. If I could just bring my memory back into focus. A very well-known tabla player, Samir Chatterjee, and Abhishek Malik, who's a sitar player, both very famous in India. Obviously, nobody knows them in America, but they are two great players, two very great musicians, and they're going to be playing with classical guitarist Tali Roth.
Wow.
Who's an American classical guitarist and very well established in the U.S. So we're doing a project, kind of like an East meets West kind of musical project.
See, that sounds terrific. Is that going to be a recording, or will that be some kind of live tour?
No, that will be a live recording in concert. We'll be doing a live concert DVD and, of course, a compact disc.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Well, we can definitely use more of this kind of music. Are there some things that you would like to share with the listeners that I haven't thought of to ask you tonight?
Gosh, no, I think you've been pretty thorough.
Did you have any unusual experiences while you were in these other countries? I mean, any particularly positive or any crazy things go on that you...
Not really. Well, there's only one that my wife keeps reminding me about, when I got stopped for speeding in Morocco.
How fast were you going?
I was going 40 miles an hour down the road into Marrakesh, and the speed changed to 35 about maybe a quarter of a mile up the road. Basically a speed trap. The cop pulled me over and said, you're speeding. I said, yeah, how fast was I going? He said, you're going 40. I said, yeah, that's the speed. He said, you see that sign down there? I looked, you know, get my binoculars out. Oh, yeah, 35. Well, that's the speed.
Well, I have to admit that some things must be universal because that happens all over the world.
So it was like, give me the money on the spot, and you can go.
Oh, I see.
It was like that.
Well, we can't do that here in California. You have to jump through a few hoops before you can get even be allowed to pay your fines.
No, well, there it was just pay it now, and you can go.
Yeah, all right.
So I gave the guy the equivalent of like $20 U.S. And
well, that's not bad. Maybe
but my wife doesn't let me forget that I was speeding.
Wow.
In Morocco.
Oh, jeez. Well, boy, you certainly live a daring life.
Yeah, right.
So now, after this show, are you going to be working on? Do you work there in New York on your projects? Do you have a studio there, obviously, where you do all the mixing and sound work?
Yeah, we have two studios. We have a video studio in Manhattan, and we have the audio studio and mastering studio about 25 miles north of the city in Airmont, New York, in Upper Saddle River Valley.
Mm-hmm.
So the audio is done just outside the city, and the video is done in the city.
Do you directly do that yourself with Logan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't have like a whole crew of people that are, you know, on mixers and saying, well, let's do this, let's do that. You guys are pretty much, this is your baby.
Yeah. We're hands on. Yeah.
Wonderful. Well, is there anything? We're just about out of time. So I want to thank you for being on the show and sharing all of this, and I encourage everybody to look into your music and to buy it. Anything that can help, you know, with the chakras and help you relax and help produce enlightenment is got my stamp of approval, and I know I'll be looking into it. So before we go, you want to mention, well, we know what your website is. It's logicaldrift.com, right?
Right, that's it.
That's pretty easy to remember. So is there anything else that I haven't thought of before we have to sign off?
No, you've been great, and I really appreciate your taking the time and having me on your show.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, John, for doing the work you do and for helping us all gain some peace of mind and through music. I really appreciate the kind of work that you guys are doing, so we look forward to seeing what's coming out. I'll be keeping an eye out myself.
Well,
so
thanks
a lot, John.
It's a pleasure being on your show.
Wonderful. All right. Well, good night, John, and good night, everybody who's listening. Bye-bye. Okay.